A total fail in filmmaking. First, if you are wondering why this movie has a 9 out of 10 rating, it is because IMDb keeps deleting reviews that give it a low rating.
It's obvious theory, yes.
This movie's producer spent a lot of money on marketing, if you know my what I mean.
Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
Dune Part 2 managed to turn an epic sci-fi saga into what feels like an interminable church sermon in space. Imagine sitting through a cosmic mass where the hymns are replaced with sand, sand, and more sand.
It's almost like to just figure out how Dune works.
That was a one-star review on IMDb. Hello there, and welcome to Spoilers Intended, a podcast about series and films. I'm your host, Andrew, joined as always by Ryan. And Steven.
Long live the fighters.
The Fadaiken.
Fadaiken.
This week we are discussing the 2024 film Dune Part 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve, starring Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, David Bautista, Christopher Walken, and Stellan Skarsgård. That's a hard one.
That was a marathon of names.
Yeah. Well, it was like I started like listing them down. I was like, well, I have to list him. Well,
they're all relevant. She has to be in here. Yeah. You got to have this one. can't miss them.
Yeah. So, before we even start talking about Dune, we do have some housekeeping that we can do. Right now, we have a Patreon picks poll that you can go vote in right now if you are a patron, or you can sign up for just $1.
$1.
That gives you access to all of our bonus content and stuff. But you can vote in the Patreon picks poll. Mm-hmm. What that is basically you get to vote. We'll review it. Patrons get early access to it before it hits the feed. Mm-hmm. And
we have a theme each month. Yep. And so this month's theme is
comedic heist films. We have The Pink Panther Strikes Again, Ocean's 11, Snatch, Fantastic Mr. Fox, and Tower Heist.
Yep.
All of which I feel are kind of like a really good, like quintessential bunch of like.
Yeah.
That is a good set of heist films. Yeah.
And they're
actually
all wildly different. So it it really runs the gamut.
Cover a spectrum.
Yeah. So.
So vote now.
Yeah. Vote. Yeah. Go and vote now.
Also coming up. Not long after this episode releases, we have the Spoilies will be going live both on YouTube, and there will be a regular episode in your feed running concurrent with the Oscars, essentially.
Yes, that is
the Spoilie Awards are coming up. You can see our beautiful faces.
People have been voting. You've made your voice heard, and we will be revealing the winners March 10th.
Yes. Okay, so we're talking about Dune Part 2. If you haven't seen Dune Part 1, you should probably see it before you go see this film.
I would highly recommend that.
You might be a little confused. Yeah, a little lost.
I'm going to give a quick synopsis, and we'll go over, all some details and stuff. So, yeah. Paul Atreides unites with Chani and the Fremen while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family in Part 1, facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the universe. He must prevent a terrible future only he can foresee.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're roughly
there's worms in there, too.
There's a lot of worms in there. There's
there are some worms.
Popcorn bucket that is definitely something.
Choices were made.
Well, so with the popcorn bucket, I really feel that someone at the baseline of, the development team for popcorn buckets with AMC, they knew what they were doing, and they had just enough salesman pitch to get it in.
Or the people above them just don't have a clue, and they're just like, yeah, it's a worm, that's our brand.
Or maybe they own a bunch of companies, and one of them is a sex toy manufacturer, and they're like, we have all these left over.
Yeah, we have all this stuff. Oh,
no. Can we just take this and put it on top of a popcorn bucket?
Oh, man. Yeah, so.
At least it's not. These were returned. We need to take these out.
Okay, so this movie had a budget of $190 million reported.
Okay.
Cost.
And this was filmed during COVID or after?
2022. Filming wrapped in 2022.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when we're recording this, we're basically recording this the weekend it came out on Sunday. So our box office numbers are not going to be accurate by the time you hear this.
Usually you got to wait till Monday to have the solid weekend results.
So Box Office Mojo had $32 million for what they're expected for, I guess, Friday and Saturday. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I did go to Wikipedia. So obviously take this with a grain of salt because this is just speculation, basically.
Yeah.
In the United States and Canada, the film's advanced ticket sales surpassed that of Oppenheimer, which is pretty cool.
That's impressive.
It is projected to gross 65 to 80 million from 4,000 theaters in its opening weekend. It is also expected to gross 85 to 90 million from 71 international markets for a worldwide debut of around $170 million. Which is pretty good because that's going to almost make its money back from the budget.
So I pulled an article here that was posted like literally 20 minutes ago where they're projecting $81.5 million domestic debut.
Okay, yeah. so that's really good.
From Variety. So that's
on the top end of the
They're on the high end of their projections.
Yeah, and the film made $32.2 million on its first day, including $12 million from previews on Friday the 25th and 29th, and IMAX screenings. it made up $4.5 million of the early total, so 38%. Of that was
that's
IMAX.
A, that's a
oh, cool. screening. Screamings.
IMAX! IMAX!
Whatever the logo comes on, it's screaming at you.
Dude, that would be awesome.
They do like the THX test first, the warm. Then it ends and it dies out, and then there comes up with eyes. IMAX! But yeah, THX is like.
It's like the 80s like energy drink commercials.
When they used to do the test, that was the Jurassic Park, the T-Rex roar. It's like, it's just, I'm a...
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so this is definitely part two of or possibly a three-film series. There hasn't been a third movie that has been announced yet, Denis Villeneuve has stated that he would be down for.
And certainly not to give away too much, the ending here does leave the possibility for a third film.
Yes, and that is basically how the book ends as well.
Yeah, it's pretty on track. I couldn't remember. I didn't go back and reread the book for all the particulars. Mm-hmm. I know there are some deviations, but the ultimate final landing is basically the same.
It's pretty much the same.
It just made some concessions to, hey, this is a film, not a book. We can't spend all this time doing this or that.
So we'll
get into that after spoiler.
Okay, so I want to hear what you guys thought about this. One of you pick it up. I don't care.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I don't think I liked it as much as the first one.
I think actually it's not as good as the first one, but this is also the middle child syndrome that you run into.
A bit, yeah.
But I also think that like if there is a third movie, I think this will end up being the Empire Strikes Back of the trilogy.
I can see that, yeah.
Because for me, I listened to the audiobook and finished it like Thursday night.
Yeah, like right before.
Right before. Rewatched the first Dune movie Friday night and then went to see this Saturday. So I was like, bang, bang, Dune, right?
It's a lot of Dune.
Yeah. I think there are definitely some points in this movie that are better than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I think specifically Timothée Chalamet in the first one is kind of mopey and quiet.
He does great in this, way up.
Because I was worried after finishing the book that he was going to have what it takes to be as intense as he needs to in this second one. And everybody in this movie delivers on the acting.
They nail it.
Him and Rebecca Ferguson get just a tour de force.
Oh, yeah. Both of them are just doing great. The biggest thing for me is that like, when I left the theater from the first one, I was like, whoa, what did I just see?
Yeah, you're super hype.
Yeah, and when I left this one, I was like, that was pretty good. Yeah, I liked it a lot. Yeah. And not to downplay it, I just think that the first one to me, it's the pacing in this one. Like, the front half of this movie has one speed to it, and the back half has another one. Mm. Not to get into spoilers, but, like,
I mean, they cram a lot into the back half of it.
Well, so the other thing, too, is it is really just the content of Dune's story.
Yeah.
Dune's story is really front-loaded with a lot of stuff.
A ton of stuff happens at the front, and then the middle ground is kind of,
it's
I don't
like,
want to
okay,
call it
now
quiet.
We're
going
to character build.
Yeah.
Well, and so, like, when I was listening to the audiobook, I got to the exact point where the first Dune movie ends, right? And it was like chapter, I want to say 35 out of 48.
Mm-hmm.
So the first 35 chapters is the first movie in the book. And then the last, like they cram a lot in that last bit. And that's what this movie is the part. And it feels like it, for better or for worse, like they're cramming a lot of stuff in here. And for me, some of the deviations I liked, some I didn't, and I think they'll make more sense once we see a third movie.
Well, and part of it too, because like there is a lot of front-loaded stuff in the first movie, just because it's a lot of setup, And in the book, there's a big time skip.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
happens where we don't get that in this, which I think is for the better.
It's for the better. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Steven, what did you think?
I enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. I think I'm in the same boat here where I don't think it had the same impact the first one had.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is, I think, just a issue with expectation, right? When we sure. watched the first film, the visual impact of that film was so incredible. Like, think about the, yeah. the moment, like the ornithopter takes off, mm-hmm. right? Just stuff like right. that where you're like, whoa, well, like they're doing this.
Because you have so much thick world building yeah. in the first film mm-hmm. compared to this where we're already here.
We already know. They've laid the groundwork.
Yeah.
And so I think to that extent, some of the big shots and scenes don't hit as hard in the second film because it's yeah. almost, you expect it. You're like, well, they better do this.
That's not to downplay the visuals or downplay
They're very good.
The movie executes, you know, a spectacle in an incredible way.
The music's incredible. But again, it's just, we've already experienced pretty yeah. much the soundtrack and there's some changes to it in this one, but yeah. it's not like major deviations.
I will say though, I do think they
it's still really good though.
Yeah. They played a lot heavier with the like light and dark lighting mm-hmm. in a lot of scenes. The very atmospheric shots.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some really cool setups that really kind of drive home the idea of this is a galaxy spanning empire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I thought were really cool.
Yeah.
Well, and especially, and you may get to this in trivia, but like the Harkonnen homeworld stuff they showed.
It was shot in infrared.
They shot with
that
infrared.
That was cool.
To give it
I like some, that.
The whole time I'm going, how'd they get this look?
Yeah, because Giedi Prime is like the planet that the Harkonnens are mm-hmm. on. And yeah, it's like totally, like it's meant to be completely right. different. Yeah.
And so like there's so many things in this movie that uh-huh. are visually spectacular that I was like, whoa. But I guess it's just the first Dune. I think it's an expectations thing. I knew this was going to be good.
Yeah.
Whereas the first Dune, I was like, let's see how what they can
exactly.
do.
Yeah.
I trust an evil nuke. Yeah, yeah. Like, let's see how it works. And then they nailed it. And this mm-hmm. one, it's not they didn't nail it. It's just.
Well, it's almost at this point yeah. where if they fumbled it, then you'd be like, oh, how could you mess this up? Whereas right. the first one, it's like, how are they going to make this work? Oh, yeah. they landed right. it.
Yeah. yeah. So expectations yeah. are lower going in where expectations going into this one are higher. So then you're already expecting the Dune movie yeah. or Dune Part 1 level of quality, which we got.
Yeah.
It's just it didn't do enough to like put itself above it,
mm-hmm. right?
But that I don't think that's a bad thing.
It's not like, a bad.
No, yeah. it's not.
Yeah,
it's just to that extent. I still think because I've seen a lot of people talking about well, is the second one or the first one better?
Yeah,
which one's the better film?
I think the first one's the better.
I'm still in the camp of I think the first one is better,
mm-hmm.
just because I think yeah. they maneuver through so much world building so elegantly
yeah.
in the first film that it was mm-hmm. really impressive to see. Mm-hmm. And like just the visuals at the time were just so mind blowingly good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, when we're playing the game of how do you adapt, you know, the unadaptable book, right?
Yeah.
But this is still a phenomenally yeah. good film. I was not in the least bit disappointed or bored.
No. Oh,
or,
yeah. Like
I think there's a couple of really large characters that they kind of introduce in this movie and midway through this movie that I kind of wish they had alluded to a little earlier.
A little earlier.
Maybe
yeah.
even in the first movie, I'm not sure.
Is this a Fade Rotha?
Yeah, Fade, yeah. like specifically, and like we'll talk more past the spoiler wall, obviously, yeah. but like there's characters that are huge that get kind of introduced like
quickly.
Over an hour
really,
into the movie.
Really quickly, yeah. yeah.
And it's like, oh, and it's like, I feel like there could have been maybe some editing where you work that in a little mm-hmm. earlier, just mm-hmm. so it's not like a late game thing.
Yeah.
You're kind of seeding it throughout, but
yeah.
I really want to see it again mm-hmm. because I had certain expectations going in and I came fresh off the book.
Yeah.
And so when things started to deviate from the book, I was like, how do I feel about this? I think it makes sense for the movie, but uh-huh. then there are...
I think pretty much all the changes that they made make sense for it. And I'll get into some trivia.
Yeah,
I figured that would be some trivia.
Because, yeah, like there's some really heavy book spoilers and movie spoilers kind of like...
Yeah, if you're going to make those yeah. kind of comparisons, yeah. you're going to have to give
it's
away
tough,
the house
yeah.
here. Yeah.
yeah. I'm talking around
everything. Well, yeah, so, you know, what, you know, I guess... Would you recommend seeing this would be the question.
Yeah, I absolutely. If you've seen the first Dune.
Yeah, you can't just go into this blind.
I don't think I would recommend this to anyone who has not seen the first Dune.
If you like the first one, I don't think there's any way that the second one disappoints.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah,
I think the only thing is just knowing that they are angling for a third. Yeah. Again, if you're familiar with the books, you know kind of where that the story, there's more story past.
There's still kind of a non-ending.
Right. I actually saw that in a review that someone wrote where like the person behind them was like, oh, look at this, another non-ending.
I read that too.
Yeah, you saw it.
Yeah, the IGN article.
Like,
yeah.
But the thing is like, that's how the book ends.
Well, I mean, this is how, right. Again, if you ever have been in your local bookstore, Barnes & Noble, whatever, and mm-hmm. looked at the shelf, you'd be like, oh, Dune. And there's like,
Seven more
books past this. I wonder if the movie will have a hard ending.
I think the general audiences, though, expected this to be it. Like, they thought it was part one, part mm-hmm. two, we're done. Like, Deathly Hallows, part two, and we're out, right? So I get, because my wife was kind of the same way. She didn't realize that the third one was going to continue this story. She thought this was going to wrap, and then if the third one would be like his ancestors mm-hmm. or we'd go somewhere else.
Also, and that's partly a failing of, not to hang the hat on like Denis here, someone in production of the mm-hmm. naming convention. Yeah. Because again, like you said, Deathly Hallows, right? You're breaking up one book into two parts.
Yeah.
Dune.
It's technically three books that is amalgamated into a singular book of Dune.
But like you also have Dune, but then you also have Dune in the sense that you have the whole series, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's like going to say.
I mean, yeah, you could be all the way in part seven.
Right.
Yeah.
People say like the series Master and Commander. Well, Master mm-hmm. and Commander is the name of the first book. It's also the name of the series, which is 21 books.
Yeah.
So the mm-hmm. idea of that breaking up, they could have done a better job of naming these. Mm-hmm. Honestly.
Yeah.
And then I think it would have flowed a little better with people because if they come out and they're like, Dune, part three, this is so lazy, guys.
This actually should have just been named Dune, Paul Drinks Some Water.
Yeah, yeah, I like
it. Paul has a tall glass of water.
And then it's just a sequel to Sideways with Paul Giamatti and Timothy Chalamet. That'd be great. You could drink the blue worm juice and see all of time, or you can just go to spoilersintended.com and listen to our previous episodes. It's basically the same thing.
It's the water of life.
Yeah. We also have links to things like our Discord.
Yeah, so we have a Discord. You can come and join us. We like to talk about all sorts of stuff. We obviously new movies that are coming out, like Dune Part 2. We have what we're cooking, what we're, other TV shows we're watching,
hobbies,
what
games we're playing. Yeah. Yeah.
All sorts of fun stuff.
We are also out there. We are on socials, on Facebook, on Instagram. If you want to give us a follow, throw us a like, we'll make posts on there for some behind the scenes stuff, mm-hmm. What's coming up, and of course, whenever an episode releases, it's on there.
Yeah.
All right, we are back through the shield wall. We have dropped our atomics on it, and we are coming into the city. I don't know.
That's the most aggressive.
That's an incredibly aggressive.
We like, crossed the spoiler shield wall.
I thought you were just going to go with we've left the northern hemisphere and we've gone through the shield sands and into the southern hemisphere. No, we're dropping nukes on this sucker. Straight through.
Right through.
All right. So we have there's actually a decent amount of trivia for this.
Well, there's been a lot of interviews. There's been a lot of promotion.
Because they can promote it. So.
Yeah, there's been time to get that out there.
I mean, that's why they delayed it, which I don't know if that made a benefit or not, but like.
I think it probably benefited.
I think it probably did. Good choice.
It builds up a little bit more hype for it, I think.
Well especially with the Dune popcorn bucket. They had all the people asking. Well, no, they were asking every one of the actors on every press thing, what do you think about this bucket?
And like, so.
Yeah.
Did any of them put their hand in it?
No, Josh Brolin in one interview acted completely clueless about like, that's just weird. It touches your hand. And they're like, well, I don't think it's your hand that some people are. Anyways, next question.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. So here's just a couple, some little bits of trivia.
Yeah.
So Stellan Skarsgård for Baron Harkonnen's body makeup took 8 hours to apply and 2 hours to remove day of shooting.
Oh.
He didn't drink anything and took Imodium pills in order to avoid having to go to the bathroom during shooting days.
Dude
is like a slave to his own art.
There's no way out of this suit.
That is the one place where it feels like technology and movie making needs to step it up is the amount of time. Like when Jim Carrey is having to talk to former CIA people about how do you survive waterboarding? Why do you need this? So I can endure going through makeup to be the Grinch.
Yeah.
Right.
At some point we have to figure out a way to do makeup faster.
But now he's in this big suit. There's already tubes coming out of it. We can't figure out a bathroom situation for him.
Right.
Involved.
Yeah.
Like, Come on.
Just put a little vacuum pump in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Wait, which tube did I hit? Oh, no!
Okay, so this is a bit of a long one. So Denis Villeneuve said he will not release any deleted scenes, explaining that I'm a strong believer that when it is not in the movie, it's dead. I kill darlings, and it's painful for me. Sometimes I remove shots, and I say, I can't believe I'm cutting this out. I feel like a samurai opening my gut. It's painful that I cannot go back and create a Frankenstein and try and reanimate things that I killed. It's too painful. When it's dead, it's dead. And it's dead for a reason. You know, dude,
that's the most French answer I've ever heard.
I feel like Denis is giving this speech at a bar, and at the other end of the bar is Zack Snyder, and he's just staring at him as he says these words.
Yeah. The
movie, full eye contact.
And he goes, what are you talking about?
To finish the quote, the movie prevails. I'm very severe in the editing room. I am not thinking about my ego. I'm thinking about the movie. It's very French.
Zack Snyder turns to him again. French. What do you mean?
He like finishes that statement, takes a long drag on a cigarette, and then puts it out on Zack Snyder's forehead.
But Zack Snyder has passed out because he can't handle hearing any frothing at the mouth.
Yeah, yeah. So particularly this is kind of probably in a response to Stephen McKinley Henderson and Tim Blake Nelson filming scenes for Thufir Hawat and the Count Hasmir Fenring, respectively, but they were ultimately cut from the film completely.
See, I did think it was interesting that we didn't see anything of Thufir in this film.
Well, they did get a special thanks in the credits because they did film their scenes, but they just were ultimately cut.
Right.
And that actually makes me a little sad because the whole time through, I was questioning myself because I didn't go back. I wanted to just enter this cold. I didn't go back and reread. I didn't go back and rewatch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was like, man, I don't think he died in the end of the first. I'm pretty sure he was definitely alive. And
well, yeah, because in the book, he is basically forced to be the Baron's mentor.
Yeah, he's forced to work for the Baron.
Yeah, which is like the ultimate, like Atreides, like, you know, middle finger.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Thufir is one of the best mentats, like, and that's why the Baron wanted him.
That would have actually, it disappoints me a little because I think it would have added an extra element to what we had going on Harkonnen planet, Gideon Prime.
Gideon Prime, yeah.
Nailed it.
I think the difference,
Gaiety
though.
Gaiety Prime.
Yeah. The difference is that in the book, Thufir Hawat has such a much larger role.
I think them cutting it just makes a little bit more sense from the time, like the time it takes of how much we need to build Paul's character. And
you have to spend a lot of time in the desert.
Yeah.
And you can't necessarily spend a ton of time, but I do wish that if we had gotten, again, if we go back to the first movie, if Fader Rotha had been introduced a little earlier, that saves us some of that.
A little
that
has bit.
To happen. And then when you're Planet Harkonnen or wherever with the Baron, you could have a little bit of these interplays. Yeah.
So Christopher Walken plays Emperor Shaddam.
What a casting.
The fourth. Coincidentally, Walken also starred in the 2001 music video by Fatboy Slim, Weapon of Choice, a song which includes multiple references to Dune.
Yep.
It sure does.
Yeah.
So,
which is just funny. Like
Walken was the only member who I wasn't 100% on with the casting.
It's because he's just Christopher Walken.
He just looks like Christopher Walken, yeah. And it's hard to see him, his like, stance as the Emperor, the way he's looking at people, and then he opens his voice and he's not just like, well, so you see.
But they also, and I'll give him credit this, they told, hey, dial it back. He didn't go, Paul.
Yeah.
Atreides, come closer. You know, like he didn't full walk in it or anything like that. But
it's almost like seeing him, you expect it.
His hair is just Christopher Walken. Like
hair.
I'm looking at his IMDb on the Dune like part two. Walken. It's the same hair. He just showed up and said, I'll wear the robe. You know, I did a terrible Christopher Walken. But it's like, get someone else. I don't know.
Yeah.
I love Christopher Walken. It felt weird.
Yeah, he was the only one that I was like, but just because I like Christopher Walken a lot.
Well,
because
it's almost like they cast Jeff Goldblum and then he doesn't talk like Jeff Goldblum. You're like, okay, hold on. What? Why do we cast him if you're not going to have him Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah, so Austin Butler put on 25 pounds of muscle to play Fade Rautha.
Get ripped.
He's so hot right now. He's been in,
he was in Elvis.
Elvis, Masters of the Air, right?
Masters of the Air. He's having a good year.
He's having a really good run here. Well, I mean, this happened in 22 for him. But his star is rising, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he did a fantastic job. And on that, Austin Butler said he toned down his method acting for playing Fade Rautha.
Walk around the house stabbing servants. Wouldn't go over well.
I've definitely in the past with Elvis explored living within the world for basically the 3 years that it took to film Elvis.
Good Lord, 3 years.
Is that peanut butter banana sandwiches and shooting shotguns?
Yeah, and he said basically that was like night and day, like living Elvis kind of stuff. But he said with Thade, I knew that that would be unhealthy for my family and friends, so I made a conscious decision to have a boundary.
I didn't want to, quote, pull a Jared Leto.
But yeah, it's, I mean, he did a fantastic job as Thade.
He was great.
So the only minor complaint I have, and it's very minor, is that it sounds sometimes like he's doing a Stellan Skarsgård impersonation.
Oh, no. I like that.
You did?
Because,
okay.
Again, they're related. And
yeah, but I don't sound like my uncle. So it's weird,
right? But your uncle isn't the head of the house.
You don't know that.
In a sense of like the lord of.
He's a baron.
The baron.
Oh, you're talking about like his kind of like throaty voice.
He had some of the same voice intonations. Like
I think that's fine.
I thought it was good because you have, you look at, oh, good Lord, Rabban.
Dave Bautista.
Thank you. Dave Bautista, and he's his own character, whereas the Chosen One is more imitates Baron.
Mm-hmm. The Baron, yeah.
Well, I really, and this is more of just the whole Dune thing in general, is I love how Rabban is just all bark and no bite at all.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's like, he's so coward. He's so terrible.
Intimidating. Except for
he's
that one time where he smashed that dude's head into the console like 8 times.
Because they can't do anything about him.
I know.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, he's so useless.
But I thought Dave Bautista did great.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of the big changes, I think, for the book for me was I actually really liked them giving Chani some agency in Paul's story.
Because in the book, she just kind of like once Paul reveals the plan, she's like, sounds great, let's do it.
Yeah, it's like, if you need me to leave, I'll leave just to, you know, make sure that
we're going to make this work. Whereas here, she's more of an actual, her own person.
Yeah. So for me, it was
not a religious fanatic.
I didn't mind the Chani changes. Mm-hmm. I thought that was actually cool.
I thought it was good. Yeah.
It was more that they changed Stilgar to be like a fanatic and like really a believer. Because in the book,
and he's not really that much.
No.
In the book, multiple times he's like, "I know you as Usul. I don't know this Moadib guy.
Right.
He sounds like a weirdo.
He's another friend of Paul,
I think the reason why they did that
was to counterpoint the
Chani change because they really needed to have the divide, and basically a generational divide.
Yeah,
and you also bring in Josh Brolin, Gurnick.
Gurney Halleck,
who is his buddy
and
can talk to Paul that way. So you don't necessarily need another character who's treating him the same way.
Yeah. And I do like that they actually removed the whole thing of Gurney like trying to accuse Jessica, as like the one that betrayed them, and he tried to like murder her.
Well, again, there's no time for it.
There's no time to do all that.
I think you would need a lot more of the Mentat and like the Dr. Yue stuff. Mm-hmm. When we watched the first movie, and we're spoiling the book here, so apologies. You should read it; it's really good.
But it is a really good book.
It's been around for 60 years.
We're watching the first movie, and my wife was asking me like, so what's the big deal with it being the doctor? Because in the first movie, they never make anything out about the Sook training and the fact that he's basically supposed to be uncorruptible.
Unbreakable,
Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have that, then it doesn't make sense to have the reveal of it was Dr. Yue, you know, like, so that whole through line can just go away because it was just the doctor did it, you know, in the first movie.
Yeah, he's just a bad guy.
He's betrayed him,
The Jessica stuff, that's what I'm really conflicted about because Stilgar kind of has
I really liked her change.
Funny moments.
Yeah, like he did have some really funny
Which I liked that. I was like, okay.
Again, Javier Bardem is just in there, you know, making it work,
But Jessica, I really liked her character in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me in the book, it's that moment where she's like terrified of Paul.
Yeah.
And she realizes like, I can't do anything. Basically, I'm just here for the ride.
He's out of my control at this
point. Whereas in this one, she's almost the villain. She becomes like the villain of the movie at one point. Well, and I was like, oh, not Jessica. But I appreciate it now.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the movie.
In the moment.
As it's happening, I was like, I don't know how I feel about that.
So one of the big things whenever the book came out, like Dune came out, Frank Herbert actually said, or he felt that the people that were reading it, that were like applauding Paul and all this kind of stuff, they misunderstood him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's why he wrote Dune Messiah, which is basically the second book in line, which is the finish of Paul's story, which is essentially a cautionary tale of like, hey, maybe the guy that you're deifying probably ain't that good of a guy.
Right.
And I think them introducing those kind of concepts into this movie was a really good idea.
No, I think too, now, after I've seen it, I want to watch it again to kind of go
going
in,
through the lens
to break yourself away from the book framework and just take it as it hits. Yeah, well, that was my goal with this.
I do like at the end of it where Chaney is like on her own.
Yeah, she's like, I'm out.
She's catching a sandworm. I'm out. Because again, in the book, she's like down to clown. She's like, let's do it. You want to marry her? Cool, bro. You want me to buzz off to the desert? No, stay? Okay.
Yeah.
But I do miss that you had that, there's a really good line in the book where he looks at Chaney and he basically says, she'll have my name and that's it. Like, you have my love, all of me. You know, like basically.
Yeah, they didn't hit that as well, which again makes sense for the movie because there's kind of a rift between them in the movie.
Well, because she actually knows the whole plan going into that final act, where in the movie she's like finding out with everyone else and she's like, oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I appreciate that change, and I think I will enjoy it a lot more when I see the third movie.
Yeah.
To see like how it kind of pays off.
Yeah.
But also, I did like in the movie, I like the amount of time they spent with the different, I don't want to call them factions, but the different leaders within the Bene Gesserit, because you kind of see Jessica's choices against
the Reverend Mother.
The Reverend Mother who is with the Emperor.
Yeah, Mohiam. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And her influences with the princess and also the influence of the overall things that have happened. And this is very much so Jessica's revenge for what happened.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I like that they gave, you know, Florence Pugh, Princess Irulan, a little more than just being.
Yeah, she doesn't just show up at the end and is the prize or whatever. Well,
now, granted, like in the book, you do have all of her little preludes, chapters.
Yeah, her his history notes or whatever, basically, which they show in the movie, which is cool.
Yeah.
But I liked the bits with her talking with the Reverend Mother, talking with the Emperor. Mm-hmm. Those were all good.
Well, I thought Lea Seydoux did really good as Lady Fenring. And I'm kind of glad they cut out Count Fenring because even in the book, he feels like this
extra character that just pops in.
Yeah.
And then in the last scene, they're like, Count Fenring, this is the most important thing. And I'm like, who? What's this guy's deal?
and then
he becomes a non-issue and you're like, why was that even introduced?
So
like for her to basically play both parts in one, I thought they did really good with that.
So what do you guys think about Paul being the one to kill the Baron instead of his sister?
Okay, that's another huge difference.
Major difference.
That is a huge change. Well, they don't give you enough time for his sister. I mean, this is a 9-month stretch at max because Jessica's
pregnant
at the start and she's still pregnant at the end.
Because
in
the book, it's like 6 years.
Oh, there's a ton of time.
So it definitely compressed it. Mm-hmm. But like,
she just reaches out of the womb and kills the bear. Like, whoa!
Gamjamar!
full alien in here.
I don't know. I liked it.
I loved it.
It was satisfying.
Scene.
The scene was great.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where like, I was trying to think of how are they going to do this. I know how they do it in the book. This is going to be different.
Yeah.
And then when they did it, I liked it for the movie. So I think the more space I get from it, the more I like it and the more I appreciate it.
The payoff is good just because so much of the story is Paul focused and it's Paul's revenge. Like this is the actual moment of revenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
And especially
which I loved.
With him knowing, hey, this is actually my grandfather as well.
That was that moment.
That was a good line.
It was really fun because my wife had never read the book, so she didn't know that Paul and Jessica were Harkonnens.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, whenever that happened, like, I could, like, see her reaction, not, like, through the side of my eye. She was like, oh. I was like, there it is!
Yeah. But, yeah, like, I thought that scene was really well done because, like, when he kills him, it's no messing around.
Oh, yeah.
He walks in.
Just.
He says something, grandfather.
Yeah, and he's like, hello, grandfather.
Yeah. And it's done. And then he's on the Emperor, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that was a really good.
So one complaint that I had for the movie as a whole is in the first film, it felt like the way they handled shields was really well, really good.
Yeah, basically shields were non-existent in this.
They just kind of forgot they existed for a while, and then they had moments where like, oh yeah, shields, we should address that. Okay, anyways, moving on. It's like, but all these people have shields. Like, this is the whole reason why everyone pulls a sword. Like, there's the way this is set up, gunfire starts happening, and dudes start pulling swords. It's like, this looks dumb. Y'all need to readdress the fact that you're protected by this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they don't cover in the movies like they do in the books. That, like, the reason you use shields is because you can't use lays guns against somebody because shielded, like basically an atomic bomb size explosion.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so while we're here talking about lays guns and shields and stuff, that first attack on the one of the spice miners
crawlers or whatever.
Where Chaney has the RPG.
Oh, this is so good.
That was
this
probably
is my complaint right here. So it is. It's a really great scene. And then at the very end of it, they just, from the ridge next to it, laser gun it down. And they never justify why you had to take all this risk going near it when you could have just done that from a distance anyways.
I mean, sure.
They needed...
Well, that's an in-universe explanation that we just never got. They needed
to address, it's shielded. We can't just laser gun it. We have to bring the shields down by doing the infiltrate and, you know, the... Return of the Jedi maneuver here. Yeah. We have to do that. And that's why it justifies all the risk. Because the way they project the scene is they're like, okay, cool. We had this cool fight. All right, now just snipe that down.
Now just snipe
why did you do that in the first place?
Yeah. And that was part of my wife, who has never read the books, was hurt about that scene specifically, was asking about the laser guns or whatever. Yeah. And I had to give her the, well, okay, listen, here's how it works.
In universe.
They just never give us that explanation in the movies. Yeah. Which is, it's just fine, I guess. Like,
which is one of those things where there was so much emphasis around the shield in the first film. Yeah. I remember the fight in Arrakeen when the Harkonnens land and the two waves meet and you can see all the shields going on and off.
Yeah.
That was such a cool visual sequence. And we just didn't really get that. You got a little bit at the end with Gurney as he goes through. And like, it was like, oh, they remember personal shields exist here.
I
wanted another one of those style moments and we didn't really get it.
Yeah. Well, and two, like when the sandstorm, when they blow the hole in the shield wall and it's coming
and you
through.
Can see the shield.
The point was in the book. Apart. This eliminates all their shields.
Yeah.
Now we go in and we just wreck house, you know? And
well,
like,
it
they
also
really
allowed the worms to come into Arrakeen.
Well, but they didn't really address it in the movie as far as like the shields are down because of the sand.
I mean, they addressed it a little bit because they said the sandstorm's coming and it can impact our ship's shields. So I recommend you go back to orbit and you can see kind of a visualization of the shield peeling off as the sand's blowing on it. But you never really see like the shield fall as a result.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
They just didn't hit that quite as well as I would have liked. For again, we're in sci-fi, we're in a really crunchy universe where like this is like kind of the godfather of sci-fi like this, and so to not address it felt a little off and had me kind of going, I wish this was in here.
Everything is so grounded.
Steven's just over here pushing up.
It's not even that. It's just for the flow of it because they spent so much time concerned about it in the first film and everything. And it's just like, you gotta keep, you know, setting up, paying off, setting up, paying off. And like the payoff of blowing the shield wall, the worms, it's not quite as cool as it could have been because we don't see like the sands hit and all their shields just fail because they can't do it anymore.
Yeah. We don't see the moment of somebody getting stabbed and looking down and like, ugh, and the guy's like, our shields, or something like that.
Or like he takes a bullet or something from a dude riding by on a worm. They're like, the shield, something. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I will say whenever they do blow up the shield wall and you have that
freaking awesome
scene, amazing portrait of Paul with the cape blowing in the wind.
Oh, yeah.
And I love Greg Fraser, the director of photography. Good job on that one.
Oh,
I love
the
dude who had the Atreides banner on the back.
Oh,
the worm.
Yeah.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Random, two flag
sudden,
guys.
Suddenly, like, we got to have that banner, baby.
Yeah. I love, like, you know, it's very much like, especially on the, when he's on the sandworm, it's kind of like that meme of the dude in the hurricane with the American flag. Just on the street, just like, boy, let's go.
Well, and like, I had this moment where I thought, like, when did they make that flag? Where'd they get that? Did they just like? Was Jessica in the South?
Well, no,
because like,
it was in the Atomics thing. Because that's the Apollo.
Oh,
that's
right. That's right.
Flag.
Yeah.
But then I do love the like after they blow up and you have the Emperor's like.
The Sardaukar,
like you have the one
dude who
has
picks
the
banner back up.
And he's like, I have, this is my job.
Yeah, like the banner's on the ground, they're all tumbled around. He gives up the first thing, he goes, the banner goes back up.
Yep, I love it. Like it's good little like bits like that.
But also for that style of, again, it's sci-fi, but it's very feudal lord fighting.
Yeah.
It's very much so, how do you fight? You rally to the banner. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't rally to the banner if it's on the ground.
If it's
like,
on the
banner
ground.
Has to go up.
Yeah.
But man, like what a horrible job of, hey, you don't get a weapon, you just have a stick with a flag on it.
Yeah.
And everyone gets to know where you are. Why? Because you have a stick with a flag.
Because you have a stick with a flag.
It,
like, so the kind of thought that went through my head whenever like the like, you know, Atomic blows up the shield and everything like that. I was like, Denis Villeneuve knows how to do a finale.
Oh yeah,
like, just like, so, oh yeah. This
when
is
the
what...
three worms come through the sand and you just see the three big, you know, mouths, I was like, oh,
so y'all are screwed now.
I was reading I was reading some other reviews after seeing it, and there was a review where someone was like, well, the film kind of has its big climax in the middle when Paul first rides the sandworm.
I mean, that's an emotional
and
climax.
It was a big moment.
Yeah.
But then that moment happens at the end, and I just kind of said, I was like, did that dude actually finish this film?
I don't know how
you don't look at this and be like, that is the clearly action the climax. Yeah.
I think what happened, that's a good point that he brings up, of that, like, the movie's front half where he's like learning how to be a Fremen and all that stuff has like an emotional climax with that
biting
the worm. That feels like one movie.
Yeah.
And then like the back half with the action feels like a second movie.
So,
almost.
So we actually should be, arc. This should be part three.
Yeah.
And then we should have a part four for Dune Messiah whenever Don't that comes confuse out. The and place. Then Let's that's going to actually be split into
so
two.
So 3.25 is when
we're going to go full Evangelion here.
Yeah. It's like, all right, so we watched 2.22.
So the Fade Rautha.
Beta 1.3.
I liked what they did with the Fade Rautha stuff in the Gladiator Coliseum.
That was really good.
Yeah,
that was really
the
whole good. Again, the infrared shots there were phenomenal. The look of it was great. Like, just if you want to be alien and weird and creepy, you nailed it.
Well, the costume designer and the set designer said they were inspired by H.R. Geiger, and I'm like, I can see it.
Yeah.
So the ultra over the sorry the
infrared
yes
stuff too. They were talking about the costume designer was driven crazy by this because apparently, you know, they're like they wanted him to be an all black outfit.
Yeah,
and they were like certain cloths, even though they're black,
and
they
infrared,
show up white
they show
on the infrared.
Infrared. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the director of photography is like, I can't tell you why. Just, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so the lady's like, they would just try these different fabrics and three of them would work and the fourth one didn't. And she'd be like, why? And he's like, I don't know. It just on camera looks weird.
I'm
not a scientist.
We bought 6 yards of this material and we had to get 2 different yards from the other store down the road and they don't work.
Which
to
me, this movie is $190 million budget.
And $90 million of it was just different fabrics. Well, they should have just shot all the fabric on camera and been like, which ones work?
Go into the store with an infrared camera and be like, No, yes.
But like, this floral pattern looks great in infrared.
I promise you, customer service person, we are not weird.
Fade Rautha is out there in Paisley, and they're like, it'll be fine. You won't see any of this
It'll
afterwards.
Be fine.
Well, it's very much like filming in black and white for older like TV shows and stuff. Like, just to make it look good in black and white, it had to be certain colors.
The proper contrast, you have to have all these weird, like, why is our couch red? Because it just needs to be, okay? Otherwise, you disappear into it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because one of the big things from a graphic designing standpoint is when you have two colors, if they're the same grayscale value, they're not going to contrast.
Nope.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to see it. They're going to disappear into each other.
So speaking of costuming.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
This carries over from the first film. It's
particularly Florence Pugh's costumes
Irulan.
Were real.
I was going to say Jessica's Reverend Mother.
She got like all the writing on her face.
The Reverend Mother stuff where she's got the big hat with the veil that peels back. She still has the chains.
Yeah.
Dude. And I gotta say,
I was like, this lady looks wild.
Every costume creator out there needs to look at how the stuff is done in these films and look at stuff, basic, simple, small stuff, like Paul's goggles. He's been out riding a worm. When he shows back up, those things are sandy and messed up. They are not fresh off the rack.
Yeah.
Wheel of Time.
even the live action Avatar, I've seen complaints about that as well.
Yeah, where it doesn't look lived in.
It doesn't look lived in. Yeah. This universe looks lived in, and I love it. It's so good because the people who need, you can differentiate the rich from the poor, right?
Yeah.
When there's just the random Fremen and his stuff sandy and dusty and dirty, you know where his status is compared to the Reverend Mother who's on her third costume change of the day and they all look immaculate. And you're like, where did you get this fabric from?
So one thing that whenever I read the books, I never really could get a good visual of what a CH would look like.
Same, yeah.
So
they don't really describe it.
They don't really describe
much.
It. I was like, the underground
cities.
Yeah, oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah,
Siege. There we go. But yeah, so whenever I read the
this
book.
This is so well done.
And whenever they went in, I'm like, this is, I get to see what someone else visualizes it as. And I'm like, this is exactly what it should be.
Yeah.
The big water well tank was really cool. But the sequence when Paul goes into like the big meeting of the leaders, when they're in that big cave with just the beams of light coming down and random.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That's such a good shot. The emperor at his makeshift pyramid in the desert underneath the ship with the big cross beam of light on his dais.
Well, and his spaceship is just on fire.
Well, because in the book, they don't do a good job describing. They say that he has a silver, like a tent, like a monstrosity type thing.
Yeah, they really don't give you an idea what it's supposed to be.
In my head, I'm like visualizing a bunch of silver tarps, kind of scattered.
So
I don't understand.
Is this like a 6-man tent, an 8-man? Like, how big is this tent, you know?
And so when that showed up in the movie, I was like, oh, okay, kind of like that. Got it.
Big,
all right.
Big ziggurat looking thing.
That makes more sense than what I was picturing with these like silver tarps laid across like a structure. Fade Rautha, do you think they should have... I almost think they could have started the movie with the gladiator scene.
I think that probably would have been a good...
And then peppered in a couple of things with him throughout it so that we're not like... After the halfway point of riding the worm, it's just like, and now we're in Fade Rautha territory for a little bit, and then he won't come back till the end. Don't sweat it.
Yeah, they definitely needed to
introduce
for the pacing and the feel of it. They needed to sprinkle it a little better. You need the juxtaposition. You need to go back and forth, right? And you don't get that when you go for an hour and a half, and then it's like, well, here's a little bit of this.
Yeah,
go back to there.
And I liked it, like Gurney Halleck gets his revenge on Raban because he doesn't get it in the book, and it was kind of like one of the things in the book that I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Give my guy Gurney some, you know, closure here. But I do wish the fight had lasted a little longer. A
little bit. But that's
the
thing. I think it just shows, like, how crappy Raban actually is.
How good Gurney is.
Yeah. But I do agree with that in that those little vignettes of the fights were all really fast and sudden.
They were a little bit, like, I wanted a little more. Like, the bigger battle.
But speaking of a little bit more, how about the duel between Paul and Faye?
Oh, it was so good.
That was really well done.
The music drops out, and you just hear the sound effects.
Well, and okay, so this is kind of one of those things, too, because, like, you know, knowing how the book ends, and then, you know, obviously by this point, there's so many deviations. I'm like, is he going to kill Chani? Is he going to kill Paul?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, and when Paul gets stabbed, I was like, okay. Is he just gonna die?
Yeah.
Like, and that's it.
Are we about to go full? You know, I've revealed my true powers moment. Like, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, man. It was really intense, and it's crazy too because like the fight against Jamis at the end of the first movie was really good and like it really intimate. But this
one
has such a different level to it.
Yeah,
just because I think the choreography was a lot better, and then you also have kind of like. Especially going in from a book reader, like, I don't know what's going to happen here.
Right.
Like, yeah, because there's been enough changes. It's like, do they kill him? And then it's like...
Or do they fridge Chani? Like,
like, does something weird happen here? Because we still have the potential for, you know, his sister to become a character, which we had a cameo of...
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Thank you.
Who is his sister, you know, future...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we had a cameo of her scene in during the mind trip, is what I'm going to call it. Because we had a couple of weird sequences with, you know, the embryonic sister.
Yeah.
Which, again, this is one of the things when I'm watching it and people are like, oh, it's kind of an art house film. I'm like, is it? It's kind of like, an epic. Like, oh, no, it's an art house film. Yeah.
I do kind of like the little back and forth with Jessica and Paul
while they're talking to his sister.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And then he's like, so what is she saying now? She was like, she knows you need to do, you know, like, but it's kind of like fun and not like, it's not like, it's serious, but it's not like super like.
It's a little lighthearted. Yeah.
Well, and I like in the book that he has a sister and that she has the mind of an adult and she's a 4-year-old, right? Like, that's awesome. And I like that she gets the revenge on Harkonnen with the Gamja Bar in the book. Like, that's great, right? I know they attempted it in the David Lynch version with like
really
the little
weird,
girl.
Yeah. And it was wild, yeah.
Part of me wishes
about that film was weird.
Part of me wishes Denis would have taken a shot at it because I feel like Denis could have done it.
Could have done it. Yeah,
I feel like he could have done it.
He navigated so many other awkward moments that the book presents him so well that I do think. I mean, Grant, we might also, you know, in a different universe, be sitting here today like, oh man, it was so good up until the weird little child.
I don't know. See, I feel like I think Denis could pull it off, but I'm glad that. They still kept her involved,
even though
it became clear that she's not going to give birth, and this kid's not going to come out of the womb.
I'm also super glad we didn't go full Game of Thrones. Here's another childbirth.
Oh, yeah,
can we not?
Right. Yeah.
So I thought
she was going to go into labor on the back of that worm for a second. And I was like, what a wild, wild thing.
So I did like at the end when the Reverend Mother Mohiam just kind of looks at Jessica and she's like, abomination, and then like that's it. That's the only word she has for the rest of the film.
Well, and then I love when Paul uses the voice on her and tells her to shut up.
Yeah.
She's just like,
every time they use the voice, they did it so well in the first film, and then again in the second film, every time it drops, partly because it's almost unexpected.
Yeah.
They don't overuse it, but when it hits, man, it hits.
Oh man, when the old Reverend Mother does it to Jessica, I was not expecting it there, and I was like, oh yeah.
Oh, when she like commands her to drink,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I thought you were talking about Helen Mohai. Yeah. No, the Benny Jez, the yeah. Fremen. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Reverend
Mohai. I wouldn't either. And she's like, drink. It's like, whoa. And then she takes it. I was like, don't drink. What are you doing? Yeah.
No, this is not good anymore. Yeah. I don't trust this plan.
So obviously, I think we're all kind of like at the rewatch phase for this.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely want to rewatch it.
I really want to rewatch it because now that I know the changes they've made to the story from the book, mm-hmm. like, I think I will appreciate it more. I'll like it more on the second viewing.
Well, I think this would go really well as like take a day and, you know, yeah. do the first film, have a break, and then do the second film, kind of mm-hmm. a marathon day.
Yeah.
And I think that would flow really well together.
Yeah, because it picks up pretty much right where it left off. So mm-hmm. it does a really good job that way. But, you know, we're kind of like winding down here.
Yeah.
Like, final thoughts, any like favorite moment outside of what we've already talked about, which is basically the whole film.
Oh, let me think.
Okay, I got one.
Yeah.
When any sequence shot from inside the ornithopter as it's firing down, just the feel of the gun is so good. It's so well done, but also just that feeling of being like the ornithopters are still probably the coolest piece of tech they introduced. Because in the book, again, it's another one of things. They describe it. You're like, man, I don't really know what this is supposed to look like. Right. And you see, like, that is what it's supposed to
that
look like.
That is it. You got it, Denise.
Yeah, you nailed this.
So I think my favorite moment of the film was when they're assaulting the Sandcrawler initially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Paul's, like, fighting off some dudes, and Johnny's about to try and shoot at the ornithopter that's providing air support. And, you know, guy comes up behind her and he yells at her name and she just, you know, clocks him with the rocket launcher.
Oh, yeah.
And she looks at Paul and says, load. And I'm like, yeah.
Reload.
Yeah, that was a good one. When he can't quite get the dude from running at her, she just turns and just point blank launches him into the stratosphere. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
So to build off that a little bit, I think what I would like to mention one before we go is just that the chemistry between Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya was really good.
Really good, yeah.
I really absolutely. Bought into their relationship.
Honestly, the chemistry across the board in these
it was
films,
really
in
good.
This film was good. Like, the characters all feel like they interact with each other and like each other, or dislike each other, as the case may be.
But I was specifically impressed with Zendaya because, like, I don't love her in a lot of stuff because I feel like she's always just mopey and kind of an outsider girl.
I think she stepped either the material given here or the direction or whatever, but she stepped up.
She stepped up because really, she still is that really kind of mopey outsider girl in this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's way better.
It's way better. Like, and what
well,
she does with it.
Well, because you have a good emotional connection between her and Timothy Chalamet.
Maybe when you go from having to act opposite Tom Holland to Timothy Chalamet, and she's just like, wow, this is way better.
I mean, they're actually in a relationship.
I know. Poor Tommy.
All right, so, you know, it does sound like we're wrapping up. But before we go, we always have to talk about our Patreon.
Yep.
For $1 a month, you get access to all of our bonus content, which is guaranteed once a month for an episode.
Sometimes more.
Depends. You never know. We also have Patreon Picks Polls, which we've already mentioned at the beginning of this mm-hmm. episode. And
the bonus episode for this month is March Madness, where we took a bunch of movies that released in March. We seeded a bracket with them, and then we did like a March Madness style
NCAA tournament. Elimination tournament where some wild matchups in there. Unexpected.
It was a pretty fun.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I mean, we've had other great stuff. We go back to the ChatGPT for a couple of different things. Let it give us theoreticals on relationship problems, and we try to give it advice on how to navigate that. And
Terrible advice.
Well, and if you want to preview any of our Patreon bonus episodes, there's a 10 to 15 minute preview in the feed. So you can just scroll back to our normal feed, try before you buy. But it's only $1. You get a lot of content.
It's the best way to directly support the show, as it goes straight to our hosting fees, helps us create more content as we move forward.
Yeah. Speaking of more content, we have the spoilies coming up.
Oh, like, yeah. Get me to it.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I was going to say, please watch the spoilies on YouTube. You can see our beautiful faces, or you can listen to it on the main feed.
We had a lot of participation in the voting. A lot of you decided to come in and put in your opinion. So if you want to know how that turns out, you got to tune in.
Yep.
Find out who wins.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this on release, it's coming out this coming Sunday.
Yeah, March 10th.
March 10th, yeah. But if you're listening to it after, then you can go and obviously just go back and listen to it.
Sure, that's how that works.
That is how the internet works, yes.
So as always, follow us on social. Leave us a review wherever you are listening now, and share us with a friend. And I'm Andrew.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Steven.
And every spoiler was intended.